Welcome back to another episode of Not Your Father Stocks. Tyler and I are back for some more, and I think I'm going to get us started off today. I'm just going to talk a little bit about, I kind of just took like the last week or two away from my screen, doing a little bit of reading here and there, but recognizing that I was burnt out a little bit, and I just came back and I just did some writing for the website for members. Immediately, I sat down, I just like my thought, I had such clarity of thought initially, and it kind of just took me back to thinking about sports and when I was bodybuilding, and the same exact thing would happen to me every now and then. I would get burnt out and I would just take a complete week off the gym, not even attempt to think about it. And I didn't think about investing like much at all these past 2 weeks, and I would come back with the best pumps, the best workouts I ever had. And I think it's probably an everybody thing, but I know it's definitely a me thing. I definitely have a super addictive personality, and when I get into something, it's the only thing I do, it's the only thing I talk about, it's the only thing I think about. It's 24/7. It's from the time that I fall asleep, like right when I wake up in the morning, it's the first thing I do. I hop out of bed, the first thing I do is I'm straight to my computer, all that. And I didn't even really recognize how burnt out I was. And that's what kind of happened to me in bodybuilding. And I ended up getting physically hurt. And I'm glad that investing is a sport that you can't get physically hurt in, or else I definitely would have been in for another shoulder surgery if this was something that you could get physically hurt
in. You better be careful, because you might not get physically hurt, but your bankroll might take a big hit.
Yeah, that's what I was – it just slipped my mind. But that's something I was actually going to go on to next, is because you shared the Toby Carlisle podcast. I didn't listen to it, but you said something about activity bias, and it's something that there's a lot of things that we know, but you can't always store everything forever and always pull it back when you need it. But then I just like read a little bit about activity bias, and I realized also me just forcing myself to my computer every day and forcing myself to read and learn about new businesses. It just made me want to keep, I was like disciplined enough to not continue taking more and more positions and less trades, but I did force some like small options trades and stuff like that, which nothing that I'll ever get hurt from, because it was such a small percentage of my portfolio. But I was starting to force things, and then that's when I realized, I wrote in our newsletter last week for our subscribers, I was like, just enjoy the luxury of being in the public markets. It's like, this is literally why, like the reason, at least for me and probably a lot of people, part of the reason I invest is to have more time to do what I want. Like that's the reason we do it, so we can make the money, so then we can just spend more time with our girlfriends, spend more time with your family, your dog. And I was like, I'm not doing any of that at all. It's also because almost a necessity to go through a phase like that, though, because you have to go through the learning curve so hard and build up the amount of businesses that you want to own and know the prices that you would like to own them at. So like once all that work is done, and then it's like, okay, let's just take a step back then. We have all that set up now. So let's just relax, read a book, and just for leisure, not read an investing or psychology book, read a fiction book or something, a little bit of leisure time.
Yeah. Well, you said a lot there that I think is worth noting. One, I played baseball growing up. I mean, from the age of, I don't even know, maybe 8 to I was a senior in college, and I really only got, I only hit burnout one time, and it was my red shirt junior year. And I literally went into the coach's office and I was like, yo, like I'm not playing. Like I just am, you know, really over it or whatever. But one thing about me is I think the reason I hit burnout in college was because, like you said, you were constantly thinking about it. When I was younger, I never really gave much thought of, you know, I was not constantly thinking of baseball, right? I was distracted by schoolwork, you know, other things that I was kind of involved in growing up. But then when I got to, you know, college, it became a, you know, much more important aspect of my life at the time. Like I weighed it really heavy and got really focused. And, you know, I'm like the type of person that will, like you said, you have an addictive personality. I have literally the same thing, where it's like when I'm on something, it's literally that's consumes me entirely, and it's hard for me to get off it. That's like investing. Like there's no shot I can ever get off of it because it fulfills so many of the things that I, you know, like in life, like that edge feeling, like
competitiveness.
The competitiveness, the, you know, when, you know, bottom of the ninth, you know, I want the ball in my hand and I want to see like if I can do it, and investing kind of fulfills that need. And there's not anything else that I can think of that I could probably do on a, you know, daily, weekly, monthly basis that could give me that feeling outside of, you know, investing, unless I went and started playing poker and stuff like that. But I much rather do this anyways, because I like learning about businesses and, you know, all that stuff. I think it's, to me, business and baseball stats are like the same thing. And I just read these things, and I'm sitting here right now looking over American Airlines because I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and I saw that Boeing has got, you know, whatever, they got some issues with their planes. And immediately I pull up American Airlines and I'm just looking at the stats like the same way I would in baseball, right? I, you know, if I want to look at a hitter, I'm always, okay, first thing I look at, you know, walks to strikeouts. And I want to see two times the walks as there are strikeouts. And, you know, what's the on-base plus slugging? Is that 850? If it's not 850, okay, this isn't really a good hitter. And immediately it's just like the same thing with a business stats. I'm like, okay, what's the cash per share to debt? And it's just like automatically, like I could never just look at a business like a normal person again. It's just, you know, this crazy, you know, breakdown analysis of the stats. But going through burnout is so difficult. And kind of what you were saying, like stepping away, and I think learning, like picking up something else to learn is what I think is really, really useful, because then you start learning and, you know, you learn these new things and you start thinking of ways, oh, you know, like, how do I apply this to what your passion is? And, you know, I think for me, like investing is definitely a passion, and it's something that I'll always, you know, end up going back to. Don't get me wrong. Like sometimes I get tired of it, like burnt out from it. But at the end of the day, like, it has my heart. Same with baseball. It's like when I got done playing college baseball, I literally didn't watch, you know, anything outside of the playoffs for like 2 years. And then my friends would be talking about it and I would like be clueless. And now it's like a couple years later and I'm like, just like after COVID, I wanted to watch baseball, and I've been watching so much more than I've watched in years. And it's like, I forgot how much I love baseball.
It's something that you said about always coming back to it, and it's a love and hate thing, because I just remember sometimes like walking out of the wrestling room after a practice and thinking how much I just hated that I did that. But then you take a little bit of time off, and like I said earlier, you just come back completely revamped and motivated, and like maybe be at your best, or lifting at your best, writing at your best, thinking at your best as it relates to investing. And then back also to the addictive personality thing. I don't know if you ever listened to Mike Tyson when he was on Joe Rogan. He's been on Joe Rogan's podcast a couple times, but the last one they talked about, like, because he was such a, like, I was too young to like really watch Mike Tyson fight or anything like that, but just listening to the podcast, you can get a sense of it. He was almost like hypnotized by his coach, and he was just a robot. He was a machine. He was an algorithm, but he was so tied in. But the thing is that no one can reach that level that Mike Tyson reached without the level of addiction to do that. Mm-hmm. Then at the same time, like being a rational person who maybe isn't a fighter, you have to step back and think about how that's like destroying like your life with your family. Like there's like all different aspects, because like the people who are like the top CEOs and stuff like that, they're the most competitive people that are like approaching the top level of like the dominance hierarchy. But they're probably, if you reaching that level, you're giving up other parts of your life.
Yeah, you're neglecting a lot.
Yeah.
I think Buffett has that. And I think it gets often overlooked. Like, I think, you know, he did have a marriage that was, you know, kind of ruined by his addiction to investing. And, you know, there's definitely that algorithm thing that you were talking about with Mike Tyson. I think what, like watching Mike Tyson, like the highlights and stuff of him are so interesting. Like, the guy is a very interesting individual, but I mean, in those highlights, that these punches that this guy throws are literally magnificent. But man, he was a absolute monster. If you go back and watch some of his workouts, I mean, this guy is insane. And yeah, there's totally a thing there where it's like, and I don't know if regular people that don't have that addictive gene, let's say, can have a chance of making it, you know, past a certain threshold of like that hierarchy. Like, you know, I think you have to be an extremely competitive person and, you know, really, you know, basically addicted to what you are doing to be like a CEO of, you know, maybe like a Bezos or Musk or, you know, any of these big time CEOs, like any S&P 500 company. These CEOs are amazing, you know, business minds, and, you know, they really, really, really know their stuff. Like, I don't think there's anyone that's a, you know, S&P 500 CEO that hasn't read through a library of books on, you know, a range of topics. You're not
half-assing your way to that.
Yeah. And, you know, with investing, you constantly are reading. But that's the one thing I really like about investing is you can read a range of topics. And there's a business out there. I'm looking, I like have been reading about mushrooms. And there's this company, North Spore, that's on Amazon. And it's got to be a really small business. But it's something like I would want a share of, like, I think they're doing so much right. And I think that that mushroom industry is going to hit because, you know, I've used the products and, you know, growing the lion's mane mushroom was an extremely cool experience. Like, these things, you have nothing. And next thing you know, you have like a forest of mushrooms in 2 weeks. It's, and you can eat them and they're good. And, you know, I want to grow more and more, like,
loads of benefits.
Yeah. That, you know, that's totally something that I can easily manage, have, you know, grow myself, and, you know, incorporate into my diet. Like, you know, gardening is a little bit more work, I feel like, because you got the soil and you got, you know, we got pests to come around. Like, it, you know, it is a little bit of work to garden and, you know, reap what you have. But I think the mushrooms are a little bit easier, and I'm reading more. Like, there's so many different types of mushrooms.
Oh my gosh. I know.
It's like pretty, it's cool. It's cool. It's interesting to me. So
this guy that my girlfriend graduated high school with, he's a pharmacist now, and he is like slowly trying to build his own like mushroom business, and he has like a big, he's like building a huge like indoor grow shed for all different kinds of mushrooms and stuff. It's cool. I listen to podcasts about it. There's this guy, I'll try and send it to you when we're done here. He was on Joe Rogan. His name was Paul Stamets, and he studied mushrooms his whole life, like all different kinds, and then kind of like how plants, I forget the like terminology he would use, but how plants communicate with each other. But he has this like part in the podcast where he goes in the lion's mane and how they're finding that it affects like the myelin sheath in the brain. Like, the myelin sheath helps like nerve impulses throughout your body, also like in your brain. Mm-hmm. It can like strengthen them, etc. And it's just like one of the best things that they're finding now to fight Alzheimer's later in life. And it's just crazy because it's just like grows. It just grows. Like, it's not synthesized or anything. Like, it's just
and stuff.
Yeah, just out there. There's thousands of different things.
Yeah, they're really, really interesting. And I didn't know that about the lion's mane. And I know I've read through a lot of the Alzheimer's biotechs and stuff. Like, they got no clue how to do this stuff. So that would be interesting. These mushrooms are crazy. And I mean,
from addictive personalities to now lion's mane and gardening, what a wide variety of buy your father stocks topics.
No, but it is like, you know, these like eating healthy and like that's, I have to say, like 2 years ago, I used to drink, you know, five times as much alcohol as I consume now. Like, last night I went to a party for one of my friends and I literally had like half a glass of wine and that was it. And normally I could drink the whole bottle at a party or something like that. And it's just like, I feel so much better not drinking alcohol, and I feel so much better eating poison. Healthy. And it, you know, it is a poison, right? Like, I'm looking at my friends who, you know, just like to drink like often, and they don't really, I feel like I'm noticeably healthier than them. Like, my entire lifestyle, like getting up early, you know, walking, you know, going outside, doing things versus like sitting at a bar, you know, every night. It's like, holy shit. Like, this is actually, you can see the compounding starting to make a huge difference. And I know it's like kind of in money, it works like this too, where you're compounding like small amounts of dollars. And it's like, I don't want to say discouraging, but it's like easy to, you know, I feel like if you're playing with small sums of money, it's easy to, you know, oh, fuck it, I'm going to, you know, do some options here and, you know, oh, you know, whatever. It's only $50. You know, I'll make that in a couple hours of work. And, but man, when you get like, I'm seeing some of my friends that are like, you know, way above me, and I'm like, dude, like these moves, if you, not losing money is really, really important. Like, you want to be, and this is why I have this paper system, right? Cause I have this activity bias too, but this paper system that I have literally destroys that. It literally destroys it because it takes time to fill out these sheets. It takes time to do a journal entry. It's not like going, I can build an algorithm, right? I'm learning how to code, and I can build a little program where it's like, you know, press a couple buttons, it just spits out everything I need. But that's not necessarily going to help me win.
It doesn't help you think through your process.
Yeah, it just...
It's a shortcut.
It's a shortcut. And when we are talking about businesses and you are talking about the market, you know, I like thinking about the positioning. Like, it's really important. You know, what I shorted like two stocks. I haven't really been doing anything. But okay, there's two positions that I... you know, have on my desk, and I'm like, okay, these are actually good positions now. Like, I've had a wait, but now they're ready. They're ripe. They're ready to be eaten. And, you know, now it's like, okay, you know, you do that, and then you go right back to your seat and, you know, wait, and now go look, find some more positions that, you know, have potential, and, you know, don't do anything. Literally just don't do anything. And when the time comes to do something, you know, do it with all of your focus and all of your ability, and you'll be so surprised. And, you know, how this compounding works, like, it's literally awesome. And I'm seeing like some of my friends, like, dude, it's like, you know, once you get that, you know, let's just say $100,000 in your brokerage account, like, things start to become a lot easier. Like, you're making now, like, you know, if you have a $10,000 position and it, you know, doubles or triples, that's $30,000, right? Like, that's what some of my friends make, $30,000 in a year. And I made it on one bet in my portfolio. That shit is like, talk about making time. Like, I'm making time. Like, forget about money. Like, that is time that I can go do something. And, you know, this is investing. Like, I'm kind of starting to see it now, where it's like, you don't have to research everything. I read a good tweet the other day where it was like, you don't get paid for, you know, the length of research that you do, right? It's like, he called it like the Twitter strategy, where, you know, if you're not getting your idea in 240 characters or less, he's like, you're probably not, you know, able to think about, you know, what's most important or something like that. And I like that too. I think, like, you know, really all you do need is a tweet. Hey, here's the idea.
Four bullet points is what I'd shoot for.
Yeah. It's like, you know, main points, don't worry about the rest of the stuff. You're either right or wrong anyways. Like, you know, you don't get paid more, or, you know, how dumb do you feel when you do like literally write 72 pages on a short thesis and it just gets tripled on you, like, yeah. Nicola. Like, you know, it's so silly. You're just to
building
me.
Confirmation bias the whole time there too.
Yeah, 100%.
Because I realize
then you got the hate tendency coming into play, where you're like, now I hate this stock, and, you know, you fight it, and it turns into a mess so quick. And that's why your thinking is so important in investing. It's like, if you're not careful, and I was thinking, I like to do like yard work and shit, and I'm like, you know, I think attention to detail is really important, and I'm you know, making my yard look really good. I'm doing everything. And then I'm, you know, I turn around and I, you know, I notice something for the first time. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that's probably been like that for like 8 months. And I never even realized it. You know, what else am I completely blind to in life that I need to be, you know, thinking about? And that kind of, that might even wrap all the way back to kind of what you were saying in the beginning. It's like, if you're so focused and you're so, you know, onto your task, you're not basically hydrating other aspects of your life. And immediately for me, it's like, okay, well, there's probably a lot of stuff that I need to be taking care of outside of what my main focuses are. Like what I'm seeing, what I'm not seeing is probably not so much in investing. It's more like, okay, this relationship needs to be, you know, checked on, watered, make sure the soil's right there. And like, there's probably, you know, 15 things like that, that I need to give attention to, because life is not just about investing. Life is not just about, you know, baseball or whatever your sport is. You know, there are a lot of other things that, you know, you should be focusing on and giving attention to.
Dalio hits on that in principles. And I think he just basically sums it up like one sentence and says that life is basically made off of your relationships that you have, not like professionally or career wise or anything. Just like that's your importance. Like you're tied to the community, a community that has compassion, love, supports one another and stuff like that. Without that, I guess that's what they call depression, really. Mm-hmm. Because when going back to your friends that drink a lot of alcohol, what I've noticed, I was having this conversation with someone at my work a couple weeks ago. We were just kind of talking about how we're like, you can always just like bring it back to like that humans, we're just really a bunch of just chemicals. Like we're just, it's always like the next dopamine release, whatever that we're hunting for, like that bite into a donut is a dopamine release, like everything like that. And then there's just Maslow's hierarchy. And then like now where we're at, everybody has food and shelter. Like, well, the majority, if you, at least in the US, obviously, like the our first friends, worlds. Yeah, we have everything that you ever need. And like, just like a couple hundred years ago, our ancestors never had time to like think about, oh, how that person talked about me, the vacation this other person was going on, because the next thought was just like, where do I get my next meal? Am I going to be sheltered? You didn't have time to just kind of think about little petty things like that. So like now everyone's hierarchy is met, and then you need to find a purpose after that, or else it just kind of depression. And then you kind of lead yourself into alcohol, which is a depressant itself. Mm-hmm. Because like we have investing, the thing that we talk about always coming back to keep improving on. But if someone doesn't have that thing to keep it's improving difficult. On.
No. And so when I went out the other night with my friends, and they like to play music. And I literally think that, you know, I would tell them like, yo, you guys should play like way more. Like, this is so healthy. Like, this is good. Like, you guys should be doing this and working towards it, and, you know, have a little bit of purpose when you guys play. Cause they're like a local band, and they get gigs all around town at different bars and stuff. But, you know, they're good, and they want to, you know, maybe put out a song and stuff. And I'm like, you know, and they're just, you know, it's like how the band started is they're just three guys started playing. Well, they never got to a more structured environment where it's like, okay, let's try to record a song. Like, so they don't have any goal. They're just like, okay, let's just play. Right. Because that's what they do. They just play, and it's good and it works. But when you're trying to go to the next level, you might need a little bit more of a process where it's like, okay, let's try to get one song out, you know, and then, you know, build that process on how to get that out. And, you know, cause I don't know a ton about music, but you know, there's a lot that goes into building a song. Right. And it's difficult. Like anything new is building anything is difficult, and I'm learning how to code and building like the simplest program is extremely difficult. And you hit roadblocks, you hit, you know, all types of things. Like I call them stub toes, but you know, they happen. They're very real. I got stuck on a line of code for 6 hours and I could not figure out what was wrong with this program. And literally it was a capital T instead of a lowercase T. And it took me 6 hours to,
I read the code spreadsheets before too. I've been stuck on something like that for a long time.
And I read the code literally over, you know, probably 200 times. And, you know, That's what I say, attention to detail. It's ironic. You know, I'm talking about attention to detail and I can't notice a capital T. But, you know, that was it. And finally, it's like, oh my God, you know, like, that's insane. But yeah, sometimes, and then you have your little addictions like that trip you up and you're focused on something that you shouldn't be. And I think the most important thing is you hit it really hard when, you know, these feedback loops in life are so powerful. You know, you can get caught in a really good feedback loop and, you know, get stuck in it for years and years and years. And that is like, great. If you hit that, you know, you're gonna walk up these stairs in life, you know, nice. But man, if you get stuck in the reverse of that and it becomes, you know, a death spiral, it is so hard to get out of that. You know, and I feel bad because I've seen some of my friends, you know, like just trapped by it. Even today, like there's literally almost nothing that one can do to get them out of it. They need to, you know, they just need one positive feedback loop and then they need to get trapped on it and let it, you know, work its magic. But man, when you're in that, you know, that's the one good thing about life is like, you really can't go too far in the hole. But, you know, once you get out of that, oh my God, it's like a absolute burden lifted off you. I remember when I got out of college and I was, you know, no goals. That was when I was drinking a lot. Like this is right when I was writing for Seeking Alpha. That's when I first started the page. I maybe had like, I don't know, nothing really going on. But like installing water heaters was just not it for me. That was just, you know, I was doing it just to make money and I felt like shit. Like I knew, and I, you know, I always showed up and worked hard, but it was not like that, you know, there's just not a lot of fulfillment there. And then, you know, okay, I got money, but I got nothing else going on. Okay, that's when I pick up a beer, right? Or, you know, that's when I, you know, don't really give a shit and I just, you know, sit around and do nothing. And then until I, you know, said to myself, okay, well, I'm, you know, I'm not going to do nothing my entire life. Like, I mean, I'm definitely not just going to install water heaters my entire life. Like I need to get going doing what I need to do. And, you know, it's like that just really was starting the Instagram page was like, okay, well, I'm going to get this going because, you know, I can do this. And, you know, I was always kind of good growing up at, like, I wrote a blog in high school that was pretty popular and like, I guess I've been writing a little bit, but yeah, like I know how to do these things. So let me just go out there and try them and, you know, see what happens, see what works. And then once you get going, now it's, you know, now you're playing the game and I don't look at things. I look at everything almost like pitching where it's like, okay, get your warmups in. And then once the game starts, you do not know what's going to happen. It's, you need to be making, you know, different pitch selections and making different moves at every point in the game. It's not like a, you know, a binary thing. It's like you're constantly thinking your, you know, strategy, you know, you're moving around, you're making decisions and thoughts and, you know, trying to execute them.
This is kind of a change of topic, but something that you always say is making money in all markets. And then a couple of weeks ago, I don't know where, it's like Twitter or something, I just came across a Bruce Lee quote about like being more like water. Yesterday, I don't know why it really hit me yesterday. We were hiking and it's like a pretty big loop. It took us like 3 hours and there's a lot of waterfalls on this loop. And I was just like, kept coming across areas where like obvious water has been flowing through there for a very long time and how it worked its way through the rocks and stuff. And I just like connected the Bruce Lee quote and making money in all markets to being more like water and just adapting to it, every environment that it's in and just continuing to flow. I know it was a weird change of topic, but it just hit me and I wanted to get
that out. No, and that's like, you know, that's exactly right. And I think I recognized this last year and I see it now too. Like and this is why I read the, you know, the journal and shit. Cause, and I don't really agree with, you know, everything that, you know, the way markets are always working and what's going up, you know, sometimes it's just so silly to me, but you know, I read the Motley Fool. I get their email updates. And I think that is literally the biggest clown service on earth. Like these guys are just, you know, absolute dipshits that write, you know, about Elon Musk ideas, and like none of these businesses ever hit, but like they get enough, they have a huge crowd of people that get involved in these, start talking them, and the stock prices boom, but they always, you know, get crushed. And I'm at,
and they market like Amazon, Google, and Netflix or something that they pitched back, and like
they pitch every stock.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Like, it doesn't matter
stocks to buy today. You're gonna have one if you pitch every.
Literally, okay. It's just like 10,000 darts, and they're just like throwing it. Oh, we hit one. You know, like who gives a shit? Like it doesn't mean you're good. You threw them all over the place, and you happened to hit one in the bullseye. Like, congrats. That's not how to play the game. But I'm out the other day, and the guy is older. I live around a lot of old people, and the guy was like, "Oh, you know, like what do you do?" And I was telling him about Augury, and he's like, "Oh, so you're like Motley Fool?" And I'm like, "Well, I hope I'm not as much as a clown show as those guys." But you know, he's like, "Oh, I subscribe to this stuff. I've been, you know, reading it for like 8 years." He's like, "You don't think it's good?" And I'm like, "No, like I don't." And you know, I'm like, I was a little bit more conservative. I wasn't like an asshole like I'm being now, but yeah, it's just like, I don't know, you know, there's just a lot of information out there that's really not that good, but so many people consume it and they live by it. And you know, I don't want to, I'll never fall into that category, but like making money in all markets is realizing that business fundamentals don't always matter. And there's other things that do matter in stocks, like making money, owning a business. I look at like owning a business, like ARC, SMSI, you know, Amusell. And then at the end of last year, you know, it's like SPACs just became a thing. I've been investing for, you know, 11 years now. And I think I heard about a SPAC in like 2017. And then all of a sudden in 2020, SPACs are like the hottest thing in the world. I've heard the word a million times in the past year, but like it got so popular, I literally made tripled, you know, like, or doubled money on three of these stocks, right? Like Quantum Space, Nikola even, and some other clown one. I don't even remember it, but like, dude, like those, that's literally, you know, how the market works. And that is kind of part of making money in all markets. Like that, those little things like that kind of kept me alive. Like it keeps your head above water. And don't get me wrong, you can't really risk too much there, but like if a stock doubles or triples inside of a year, that's a huge move. And it's like, you know, we're going to have like people understand how to make money in SPACs because it's working, the strategy of just buy any of them. And like, you know, you got like a pretty decent shot of hitting them. But when it comes down to making money in a bear market, like you better know how a reverse merger works. Like you better know how a business actually makes money, and you better understand what makes a good business. You know, what's the difference between a good business and a bad business? Because the markets won't move like that. They won't be offering what we're seeing now. This is what I would say is a trader's environment, where if you know how to trade, you're making money. If you don't understand business, you're still making money. When the bear market comes, that's what separates, you know, the men from the boys in terms of like, I know what a good business is compared to whatever we're seeing here. It's like, there's no real investing going on. When bear market comes, this shit's going to get real, and you better know how to read an SEC filing, because it ain't going to be the same as what we're experiencing now. This is, I think, you know, this is like a phenomenal opportunity for, you know, investors. And it's like hard to navigate through, and there's no rationale. There's like so little rationality, but you know, every person that I talk to has a Robinhood account, and they literally have no clue what's going on. Like they don't understand how business and stocks work, but they're like, "Hey, what do you think about this, this, and this?" And I'm like,
"Oh yeah, it's all the time now."
But they just don't even, they have no clue. They literally have no clue.
Yeah, you can't even conversate with them because
they do not speak a language that we are speaking at all. But they're playing the game, and like when those stocks start to go down, right? They think they're great now because they're going up, but there will be a point in time where, you know, money flows out of the market, And it, you know, a good example of what could happen is the ARC Ego Fund, right? Who are the guys that minimized the most risk? The guys that said, get us out of here fast, like immediately. So I think it was like Morgan Stanley was like the first one. They said, no, we're not fucking around. No games are being played. Get us out of this now. And now these other two banks or whatever are taking absolute baths because they couldn't make the decision quick. They didn't know, you know, oh, you know, we got to get out of here. This is bad, or, you know, and that there's a margin call movie. I only saw like the first part of it, but he's like, it's not panicking if you're the first one out. And I like, that's true. It's not, you know, you're not panicking. You're being, you know, decisive. You know what decision to make. You know where to move your chess piece. You're not panicking. You're just getting the fuck out because that's the move. And the other people that follow, you know, there just comes a point in time where once everyone's getting washed out and you're like, you know, and that's when you're panicking. You're like, oh, dude, I don't know how to handle this. I just got to get out of it because I can't emotionally take it. But yeah, I don't know.
Really, to wrap up not necessarily the burnout, like kind of the burnout, everything kind of wraps into the, you won't get burnout when, this is something I noticed with just like people that we work with and talk to that are a lot more experienced than me, it's just how quickly they can identify the couple variables that need to play out that quickly. Like all of this comes back to just identifying those couple key variables. I mean, I'm still big on the investigative research, but the investigative research that I do is to back the certain variables that I'm looking for. Oh, and then I was going to tell you, we can wrap it up right after this to get you on the way to your appointment. But I've been using the TrackPhone app. Family Path is out for Smith Micro. It's not on their website or anything, but it's on the App Store because you can find Smith Micro on the Google Play App Store and see like when they make app updates and stuff like that. And it's out there, and it's only the location services, which like Apple Find Friend can basically do the same thing, but we obviously know that 7.0 can do way more than location services. But that's all it is. But I bought it. It's like $4.99 a month. And I just have my mom and girlfriend on there, but it is really cool because I'm like using, cause I just wanted to see the product. Like I want to see how glitchy it is, whatever. And I just have the geo fences around my house, my mom's house, my work, my mom's work, like, et cetera. And it's honestly kind of like, nice, because like my mom, my girlfriend and I are usually in like pretty close contact anyways with like what we're all doing and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, mom arrived home at 5:45 p.m. mom left home, and you can see like where she's driving to or whatever. And I mean, maybe as a kid it might kind of suck, but I also like am using it. I'm like, it kind of feels good to know where they're at, and like, because they're like some of the people that I care for most, and it's just nice to know like it-
And there are, and I just know this, you know, I think that this is a winning product, obviously, because I'm invested in it. But, you know, there are a lot of people that really value that. Yeah, that's a high value.
I'm keeping it. I thought I was just going to get it for a month and just test it out and delete it. But I was like, just $4.99. And then another thing that I was like, oh, $4.99 a month. Whatever, yeah. I'll keep it. And that's the thing. It's so cheap and it's a nice quality product.
It's useful.
There's no glitches in it.
There's value, right? Yeah. We have a value. I think I probably said this, but the difference, you know, what I think what's really important in business, I like to look at this, and I got to run in a minute, but the difference between the price that you pay and the value that you receive, that there's space in between that, and that's your brand. And when you have a product like that, you have a good brand. And that's what kind of separates, you know, something that, you know, we always run into businesses where it's like you buy something and you're like, okay, well, this kind of sucks. You know, I think Jack Specific is that, because I'm pretty sure I bought a toy from them when I was like a kid. And I just quickly realized that this toy always sucks. It's like such a letdown. The commercials are awesome, but you get the product and you're like, dude, this sucks. Like, that's Jack Specific.
I remember that feeling too.
Not to completely destroy them and whatever, but like, it's just not, you know, a winning brand in a sense. And that's kind of why that's like what I can give on that. But that's great that you think that, you know, that's so that means that they have a strong brand. And that's, you know, especially when you're talking about family safety, a good brand is really important, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the variables that you should, if you're running a family safety app, you want a very good brand. Your brand is important. And I love SMSI's blogs are so good. Like, they're not necessarily for like their customers. They're like industry leaders in, you know, app optimization and shit like that. And I totally love that. I love reading their stuff.
I know. I saw, I used to read them a while back, but well, before we got keep talking, we'll just wrap it up to get you out of here.
Yeah. I gotta go get my vaccine shot. I can't be late.
Okay. All right,
guys.
Good talk. I guess we'll see everybody in the next one.
All right. Peace.
All right. See you guys.